And ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome to another edition of Nerdy Notions with Sasha Kaplan.
The slightly still loopy Sasha Kaplan. So nobody asked me to sign any contracts because that's ethically despicable. And I am only sort of mostly functioning right now. So if I say something stupid, just blame it on
It's all my fault.
Or Michael. Yeah, even better. Blame it on Michael.
Yeah.
So we enter the last, but not the last, episode of Loki. This is the season finale of Loki, because in case it hasn't been hammered into y'all, Loki has a second season coming. It's been mentioned like over and over and over again. Like, we knew it was getting a second season like months ago.
Well, actually, we knew about it a year ago.
Well, we knew about the show initially, and then I think like a few months after the initial announcement, they were like, oh, by the way, it's also getting a second season. And I'm just like, oh, God, no, please.
And you know what? And we'll get, like, since we're at it, the end credit scene or mid credit scene, whatever,
was pointless.
It is, you see the file of Loki, like from the very beginning of the series, and it has the stamp come down and it says Loki will return in season two. And
I just like pictured, you know what, when I saw that, I pictured that Deadpool gif of Deadpool just going in like the most fake like way, because that's what it felt like. It was like, no kidding, Loki's coming back after on this cliffhanger.
and something tells me, with now, right before this episode came out, news broke that Tim Hiddleston is going to be reprising Loki in Doctor Strange 2, Multiverse of Madness. So he's going to be in the film for that.
Oh, that's news to me. Okay.
Yes. So that came out like a day or two before this episode aired.
So my guess is Loki is going to be the one to show up to Doctor Strange and be like, this was my fault and I'm sorry, but let me explain.
Actually, I could see that happening in there, but by the way, Jonathan Majors, I'm just going to segue, fucking fantabulous in the role of He Who Remains. Like
Immortus.
He was fantastic. And we also know that he's going to be in Ant-Man the Wasp Quantumania, which actually leads me to believe that season two is going to lead into the third Ant-Man film. I have a feeling that, like, with Multiverse of Madness with Doctor Strange, we now know that Tim Hiddleston's Loki is going to be in that.
Tom, not Tim.
Oh, sorry. Blame that on me. Anyways, but you know that his Loki is going to be in that film. Now we have season two. I think season two is going to be the bridge between Multiverse of Madness and Quantumania.
That would make sense, actually, especially because everybody's like, oh, we need to wait for season two to whatever. And I'm like, yep, yes, you do. But you're getting a ton of stuff in between season two, in season two. Right.
But it also harps back to something I said when we did WandaVision, because I had originally said that it would have made more sense that WandaVision go right into Doctor Strange 2. Now it actually makes more sense to have Loki be the go into, because it just opened up the can of worms.
So I don't know if you know this, and I'm not sure if we talked about it on the show, but the WandaVision after credit scene was actually changed recently.
We have not talked about it. I have not seen the change to the after credit scene, but I do know about the change to the after credit scene.
It's pretty much the same scene except for two differences. One, the updated version has more trees.
Woo, more trees, just what I always wanted.
That's not the point. There's a scene as we sort of turn towards the mountain and we start seeing the cabin. There's this like blurred ghost-like figure that is flying down towards the house. And it really vaguely looks like Doctor Strange in an astral form, because it's clearly like a sitting individual.
And it is known that Benedict Cumberbatch did actually film stuff for WandaVision.
Yeah, so this must have been it. So it'll be really interesting to see how this all connects.
Well, we know Wanda, in theory, could be the baddie in Doctor Strange 2. like that has been kind of murmured a little bit because of the events of WandaVision. But now Kevin Feige is also saying Agatha Harkness is going to be coming back sooner than you think.
You know, I think we learned with WandaVision that it's best to stop speculating up to a point until we have more information. So before we even get to Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness, we still have What If series, we have the Hawkeye series, we have Shang-Chi, we have the Eternals, and we have Spider-Man Far From Home. No Way Home, whatever. Too many titles with the word home in it, okay?
Spider-Man had his homecoming, then he went far from home, and now he has No Way Home.
Yeah, so... Anywho, but this episode is not about the future of the MCU, though now we do have a slightly better picture of where it's going. Let's focus on this episode. So the first things, let me get my notes here. It begins with there's talk about Nexus events, and then we see the Marvel, like, logo, right? But the Marvel logo starts using quotes from different Marvel films and different characters, like Captain America, T'Challa, The Vision.
And one of the interesting things about that is that as the character shows up, that's when their quote comes up.
Not always.
Most of them did.
Then it shifts and it starts quoting people like Neil Armstrong and Nelson Mandela and not a single Jewish person among them. And so this part unfortunately doesn't lead anywhere. Because they're not even saying the same thing about the same thing.
Yeah, it's just having quotes in there that I think what they're trying to establish in my text message to you was, holy fuck, this opening sequence is trippy as shit. That's literally the text message. But what it does do is that it establishes the timeline, which is this big circle that's surrounding the Citadel that we then see Loki and Sylvie walking towards, that we saw him walking towards at the end of the previous episode. Yeah. So it does, in a way, have a purpose. It's supposed to be the voices within the timeline because that's what is supposed to be happening in said timeline. So that part makes sense. But the way they went about it was really just off.
And it also wasn't chronological. It was sort of like, here's the superhero chronology, here's the normal world chronology. So I guess maybe it's hinting towards the end of the episode into what we can look forward to in the future. But afterwards, we see the castle, the very fancy schmancy castle. And her and Loki have a bit of a moment of like, do you trust me? What are we going to do? We're a team, blah, 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 blah. One of us will probably betray the other at some point. And then Miss Minutes shows up and offers them kind of the deal of all deals. Like the mighty one, the he who exists outside of time or whatever, we'll fix it so you can go back and kill Thanos or go back and have your family. And she never really tells you about how that's going to happen or what the caveat is. Because I can't imagine there's that there isn't some kind of, you know, quid pro quo kind of like, okay, I gave you this, but there's the catch. But I guess ultimately it doesn't matter since they reject the deal anyway. But it does point to the fact that Miss Minutes is effectively the smartest person at the TVA because she knows that which no one else does. Meanwhile, Ravonna gets some files that she needs, but they're not what she asked for. And Miss Minutes tells her that these are the files that he says you're going to need. Miss Minutes is sketchy as all hell. Like, Anyway, so the man of flesh and blood. So it turns out that there's this dude who was there but wasn't really there. Oh, yeah. The he who shall remain controls all. And then they're sort of in this, like, circular room and with Loki and Sylvie. And the door opens. And there's this guy in a purple suit eating an apple very casually. And it's Kang the Conqueror. Actually, no, wait. No, it's not. It is the same actor who is playing a different version of the same character he's going to be playing in Quantumania. Because Kang is like, he's a living paradox, essentially. Because of all of his time travel shenanigans, he simultaneously can exist in all of time and space and simultaneously not. So even if you change the timeline, because of all of his time travel shenanigans, he's still going to be there. Like, you can, he's one of those characters you can never kill because he's a paradox. So he invites them to his office, and we find out that he's just a dude of flesh and blood, but obviously he's not stupid enough to just, like, let Sylvie kill him. She's still on the killing him trick, while Loki's sort of there like, huh, we should figure out what this guy's deal is, because he doesn't look like an alien, and he certainly doesn't look like a timekeeper, so who the hell is he? Meanwhile, Mobius goes to see Ravonna, and they talk about all their friendships and how they've been lied to. But then we go to Fremont, Ohio in 2018, and B-15 is there with a bunch of other people, and I guess she ran to that timeline. But why, we don't really understand. We think at first it's connected to her past. But as it turns out, it's connected to Ravonna, because we meet the real Ravonna in a high school of all places in Ohio.
Because she's a teacher.
She's a teacher, meaning that she herself is a variant, which, like, if everybody's a variant, then so is she. We didn't really need a confirmation on that.
Well, what it was is that, I mean, preface. It's
true for the other.
Well, no, it's preface to that. Keep in mind, Mobius and Ravonna have a discussion, and she calls for the specific hunter. I think it was like D-19 or something like that. And then you see B-15 at the school, and that's where D-20 or D-19 is. He got sidetracked by B-15, so Mobius can, because it was a setup by Mobius and B-15, so Mobius can get as close to Ravonna as possible.
Right, which, like, it would have been nice if we'd gotten a scene where, like, Mobius arrives to the TVA and, like, frees B-15 and is all like, here's what we need to do. And then he goes to see Ravonna, just to give us, like, a little bit of a hint of what's happening.
Especially the fact that this episode was a lot shorter.
Yeah, so it's just, like, it felt like there was a scene missing, and for some reason they didn't include it when they clearly had the room to.
Yeah, because most episodes have been around, like, maybe 52 minutes. This one was, like, 45. So you had about 7 minutes trimmed off this episode compared to all the other episodes.
To be honest, they really could have trimmed off a little bit of that filler episode instead and just, like, added it here, but whatever. So they can't kill him because, oh, so Kang says he can't kill them. They can't kill him because he knows how it's all going to happen. And he shows them proof, but we don't really get to see, like, so this is one of the best and also the weakest parts of this episode. It's this conversation with he who remains and Loki and Sylvie. Because he sort of just rants and he says, I know what's going to happen. But then later on something happens and he's like, oh, now I don't know what's going to happen. And it just feels a little random. But because he's all like, oh, I know all and see all in a, like, a Wizard of Oz kind of way. But it was weird. But anyway, he tells us that at one point there was a multiverse. And a young him discovered the powers of time travel and whatever, and how he and his different versions throughout time and space and the different universes worked together to share technology and become BFFs, but there was one guy who didn't like that, and so a multidimensional war started. Except what I think happened is that one of the Kangs actually, or one of the Nathaniels, however you want to call them, actually started the war, and the other multiversal factions probably teamed up to stop him, and to avoid that, he smushed everything into one timeline. That's not the explanation he gives, but we establish later that it's entirely possible he's lying. But every lie has a grain of truth, which is because the multiversal war is what leads to the creation of the sacred timeline, just not by the timekeepers. The timekeepers are very great scapegoats. So there's only really one way this all goes, I guess, is either one of them, Loki or Sylvie, takes over Mortis's job, or they kill him and deal with the consequences, of which it's unclear what those consequences are. So meanwhile, Mobius and Ravonna talk about the question of free will, and for some reason they can't prune her because they're friends. And then she also doesn't prune Mobius and decides that she's going to go in search of the truth, because what we don't really know what she read in the files that Miss Minutes gave her.
Which is going to be one of the mysteries that hopefully gets solved in season two. So.
Yep.
I don't really have much on that part.
That's okay.
I kind of said my piece on the, I mean, my next Mobius piece, we really haven't gotten to that part yet because it kind of involves near the end of the episode, so.
All right, so we'll get there. Let's see. Kang talks some multiverse, Kang, blah, blah, blah. Okay, we already got there. But, so, Kang's and Mobius's whole shtick is he's basically ready to be done. Like, he's bored. He's all alone in this castle, but what he does say that's really interesting is he learned how to harness the power of Eliath, right? And so that basically means he is, like, he has the power to destroy these other timelines. Let's see. The curse, he's already to be done. All villains here crosses the threshold to becoming... So he doesn't know anything else, but yeah, so basically something happens. There's like a rumble or something, and it's really unclear what causes it. And all of the timelines start branching out. And so now is the moment where Kang is like, Mobius, he who remains, whatever his name is. He's like, oh, now I don't know what's going to happen anymore. And the timeline branches start to like really expand. So Loki and Sylvie sort of have a fight over what they want to do, where Loki's like, you know, maybe this isn't such a bad deal of getting what we want or taking this over because we don't know what the consequences are. And Sylvie's like, nope, I want to kill him because I can. And Loki admits that he doesn't actually want a throne. He just wants her to be okay. And then they kiss, which is kind of weird. But then she uses the kiss as a distraction to stab and kill. Oh, correction. She tosses Loki into a time pad portal and then kills Kang. And then he tells her something like, see you soon. Because we know, like I said, comic book nerds know that Kang is... He tells them that basically if you kill him, another Kang will show up to take his place.
Yep.
That's how that works. And then so Loki therefore goes back to the TVA and we see B-15 and Mobius, and I think this is where you were getting to it, right? And Mobius is like, well, what does he want us to do with all of this? There's so many branches.
Yeah.
And Loki shows up. Go ahead.
Yeah, and I was going to say, and at the same time, while they're talking about that, Loki is in like a cell that's unlocked conveniently. and he's running around and he's like noticing what's going on. And then he gets to the library, which is where he runs into Mobius and B-15. And Loki explains to Mobius what's going on. He says, we found him. She killed him. And, you know, this, you know, everything's going to the hell in a handbasket, essentially. And here's the thing that threw me off. Mobius and B-15 act as if they don't even know who Loki is.
Yep.
And that threw me off.
I think it was supposed to. But then here's the funny thing. As we turn to the rest of the TVA, that's those three statues, the timekeepers are gone. And they're replaced by a different Kang. This time, the statue is reflective of his more popular suit that he wears in the comics. And this is where the episode ends, on a very confusing cliffhanger. So either Sylvie's now in charge of all of time and space, or she went somewhere else to find her timeline. We don't know. We don't know what the TVA is now doing. We don't understand. It's unclear why Loki is... They don't remember Loki. I think my biggest guess is because all of the timeline branches are branching out. And because the TVA can't handle that, so the TVA sort of tries to adjust itself. But also killing Kang can cause a ripple effect because Kang exists outside of time and space, whereas the TVA does not exist outside time and space. It sort of does, but not to the same extent, because Kang's Citadel controls the TVA. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes sense. But it's just so weird that, like, Loki, who has built this relationship with Mobius, you know, through these, like, the first five episodes, and it's like he gets to him and it's like, you know, and he explains what's going on, and Mobius is like, do you know what sector, do you know who you are? Or like it was like almost like a who are you type moment.
Yeah, and Loki's actually visibly shocked by this.
Yeah.
And so that's where the episode ends. And the final scene is that scene of the Kang statue. And then we go through the credits and I'm thinking, okay, we're going to get an after credit scene. We're going to get a scene about maybe where Ravonna went to. We're maybe going to get a scene about like what the TVA is going to be up to. And we get nothing.
Yeah, we just get the little timestamp that says that, you know, like how it was in the Marvel movies, like how at the end of the credits or something, it would say like, you know, Captain America will return in this.
Usually they say that in the credits. They don't waste an entire scene on it.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. That's essentially what they did. They just did the whole, we'll see Loki again in season two.
I mean, my brother was saying that it would have been funny if, like, in a Captain America style PSA, the after credits scene, so you made it to the end of the credits. And instead of, like, Steve Rogers saying that, it's Loki. Like, you might... We don't really know what to expect, but you'll see us in season two. And this is basically what this was. And it was kind of disappointing.
I mean, I like the idea that they did it with the file and then the stamp. I thought that was proper. I think that was actually the proper way to do it, being how you've gone for this entire theme of the TVA and, you know, having records and all this other stuff. I think that was very appropriate as a way of doing it. But that should have been something that should have been done at the very, very end. And when you finished up that, like, that, you know, the credit film reel where they show, like, all the stuff in the credit for the, you know, and then they do the credits, mid-credit scene. That's where they should have really have done something with more panache to it.
And, like, they didn't have to do much, right? They didn't need to give us a big scene. But, like, WandaVision did a really good after credit scene, right? It established that Wanda was on her way to studying the Darkhold and that she was isolated and away from everybody. It established that she's probably meeting Doctor Strange, as I explained earlier. And it establishes the idea that maybe somebody's potentially manipulating her and that her kids are somewhere out there in the universe, right? The Falcon and Winter Soldier after credit scene didn't give us much insight into what happens in the MCU, but it did introduce Valentina and US agent now working for her. And then obviously I won't get into the Black Widow after credit scene because I don't think you've seen it yet.
I have not seen it yet.
So we won't talk about it yet. But that after credit scene, without spoiling anything, also leads into other things in the MCU, right? I think this show, this episode more than the last one, really needed an after credit scene, if only to give us a hint of what was coming, at least with Ravonna. Like, you literally just could have her land in a, anywhere. It would have been fine. Or maybe something like the TVA, two random unknown TVA agents talking about something. Or maybe even something with Miss Minutes. Like, they could have done something, just like a little something, that I think would have helped us, given us a hint to what was coming and what the ramifications is. Even if it's a joke, just a joke, right? Like two agents talking, like, did you hear? Now there's a timeline where all of the Avengers are animals, right? Or maybe there's a timeline where apparently, I don't know, something else, right?
As long as we get one thing in season two, and I think you would agree with this one, we need more alligator Loki.
To be honest, I could not care less. Like, honestly, the only Loki I genuinely want to see more of is the classic Loki. Kid Loki and alligator Loki can jump off a cliff, get eaten by Alioth, and I never have to see them again. I would be fine with that.
I'm not going to lie. I'll give props to the Florida Panthers. So on Twitter, there's this thing called Wallpaper Wednesday. I sent it to you. You probably got a laugh out of it, where they took... they took alligator Loki and they kind of took it to a couple different steps on that one. They had one where alligator Loki was outside the arena. They, a child actually drew the Florida Panthers logo and they turned it into like an alligator Loki type logo, which was kind of cool. So props to the Florida Panthers for doing that. I think they're the only professional team who actually did something like that. So good on you guys.
Yep.
So...
But yeah, life is weird, that isn't it? So here is the deal.
We still have New Mutants to do.
Well, that maybe we that can be our last episode of the month before we go on our August hiatus, because Sasha's moving. We
Mike has been voluntold to actually help her. To do the move.
I mean, you might be working that day, so it's fine if you can't.
If it's on a weekend, I'm not working.
It might not be on a weekend, so we'll see.
Yeah.
Look at all of the intricate details into my personal life that our negative 600 listeners don't really need to know about.
Yeah.
But yeah, so the Citadel was fun. I like the design for King's Castle. I do like to add that as they enter, there's a shot of them inside the castle in the front, right? But behind them, you can see some of the, like, symbols that I've come to associate with Kang, which is, like, when those symbols came in, I'm like, oh, crap. Now I'm, like, that was my confirmation. Like, yes, this is Kang. Or, in this case, a weird version of him. Because Kang is, like, a freaking cat. He's, like, Mr. Sinister. He has multiple lives.
Yeah, and I said at the beginning of the episode, I'm saying it again here, Jonathan Majors was perfect. Like, I really enjoyed his performance in this episode.
Just don't keep in mind though that when he comes back, it won't be the same type of performance.
Oh, I understand that, but the thing is though is that that's one of the nice dynamics of what we're going to get, is because of the fact that Kang has all these different iterations. You know, right now Jonathan Majors played a very eccentric form of Kang, and then obviously when we go into Quantumania, and who knows, maybe he shows up in Multiverse Madness, or he shows up in season two of Loki. You know, we don't know yet. There's a lot of possibilities right now.
I think what will happen, and this is out there, I think Kang will be the first sort of real bad guy that maybe he needs the like quantum particles to fix his time travel device, right? And ultimately, that's what the cusp of the conflict is, and eventually leads to Cassie getting her powers. But at the end of the film, Kang says something like, screw you guys, I'm going to go back to the 30th century and make sure, excuse me, make sure my younger self knows that he needs to stop you or whatever. And so that leads us into a proper Hindenburg and Chung adaptation of a Young Avengers movie where Kang ends up making the biggest mistake I think he ever made, which was trying to introduce his younger self to his own future.
Yeah, and
if you have no idea what I'm talking about, get off your MCU stand butt and go read the original Young Avengers run published in 2005. Yeah. Which does not include Kid Loki and shouldn't. Yeah, so we really didn't, unlike the other two, actually one last bit here. So WandaVision introduced us to Billy and Tommy. Falcon and Winter Soldier introduced us to Eli Bradley, even though he was not named. Loki did not introduce us to anyone. And Hawkeye's going to introduce us to Kate Bishop. We're getting the band together. It's coming. Marvel, just bear in mind two very important things. We still need Teddy. He is dating Billy, and Billy is Jewish. That's it. Everything else you can tweak however you want. But these are three very important facts that need to remain in any version of a Young Avengers movie. And Kid Loki can stay on getting by Alioth.
That's if Alioth has gotten out of the enchantment, of course.
I feel like she can't hold him that far away. Remember, the enchantment was just to long enough to open up the gates to the Citadel.
Yeah. As long as Alligator Loki survives, that's all I care about, because Alligator Loki takes no crap. He sees a problem, he bites the hand that feeds him, and it's just business as usual.
I'm very happy that the fandom thinks Gator Loki is the cutest thing ever. I just personally don't care. I just don't.
Which one would you prefer us to fan over? Alligator Loki or Kid Loki?
Classic Loki.
That's not an option. Everybody already liked Classic Loki, so you have to pick one of the two.
Okay, fine. Love your Gator Loki. Just don't expect me to jump on the Loki bandwagon, because I will not. I will say, though, in terms of my love of, lack thereof, of Loki, this has been surprisingly the most tolerable Loki out of all of the movies, with Ragnarok coming in second, I think. And then maybe the first Thor movie. Because here, what the show did that I really like is that it remind us, first of all, that Loki can do magic. But also, it gave us a vulnerable side to Loki, of Loki actually, A, facing consequences versus actions, B, getting told off repeatedly, and C, being vulnerable and actually being the good guy. Sort of, depends on your definition, but more good guy than Sylvie. So I will give the show credit, but in terms of ranking, I still think WandaVision was my favorite. Falcon and Winter Soldier is like, it's like a difference of like one and like a 1.5 here, because I think Falcon and Winter Soldier and WandaVision both deserve the first spot, and then you get Loki.
But the thing is that you also really can't compare the three shows either, because all three shows are in different iterations as well. Like, when you watched WandaVision, for the majority of that series, it was like a sitcom, essentially. Yeah. And then Falcon Winter Soldier was like your spy espionage type film or series. And then Loki was more of a... But you know what I mean in that respect. It was,
they're very like, different sub-genres of what we know of the Marvel Universe.
And so it's kind of hard to compare the three to each other, because you really can't.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
And then, like, it's the same deal, because What If debuts next month? And that's something that you're not going to be able to compare to the other three as well, because it's a completely different style series. So.
Yeah, I think that's fair. At the same time, I really overall think, as a series on its own, it's okay. Like, Am I going to want to rewatch any of this? No. But I will go and rewatch WandaVision. I will go and rewatch Falcon and Winter Soldier. But I feel like this story here overall was less tight. And even if you already know you have a second season, that doesn't mean you need to sacrifice parts of the story. You can still have two semi-standalone seasons that are part of the same universe, the same show, if you know what I mean, right? Like, seasons have arcs.
Yeah.
That's all I got.
There is nothing worthwhile in IMDb's trivia stuff because all it says is Loki is renewed for a second season and thereby becomes the first MCU show produced by Marvel Studios to do so. And then it just has two things on Jonathan Majors about essentially being Kang the Conqueror, which we beat that horse to death already. So yeah. And of course, this episode was titled For All Time Always.
Which is the line that Mobius and B-15 actually do say towards the end of the episode.
Yeah, B-15 says for all time and Mobius says always.
Well, we have a multiverse now. Yay! What could possibly go wrong?
Although, honestly, we're not really going to see it take place until we get to Spider-Man.
Yeah, but it does open up some possibilities of... And it also opens up the possibilities of time travel with consequences.
Yeah. Well, I mean, but like, the next two films is Shang-Chi and Eternals, and we're not going to really see any fallout from like a WandaVision or a Loki in those two films. We're gonna, probably going to start really seeing the ripple effect come out of Spider-Man.
Well, because the original lineup was going to be Black Widow first, then Falcon and Winter Soldier, I think. Then it was going to be like Shang-Chi and Eternals. Then it was going to be WandaVision. Then it was going to be Loki or something like that.
I think it might have gone WandaVision, Spider-Man, Loki, Doctor Strange, so forth.
Yeah, so we shall see, because this is only the beginning.
Oh, and we talked about this last week. We were talking about like phase four and stuff like that. So the two dates that are still open are for the like kind of like near the end of 2023. And that's where Fantastic Four would come in. And then in theory, you could have Deadpool 3 or in a way you could have Blade be in there. But it's been well known that Blade is technically supposed to be part of phase 5. So there's a lot of interesting possibilities with those two dates in 2023 that just don't have projects officially announced for them.
Avengers
yet.
Movie.
That'll probably be phase 5.
Young Avengers movie.
I'm telling you, that's probably phase 5. You're probably looking at like 2024 or 2025 on that one.
I mean, yeah, cuz they have to recast Billy and Tommy. They still have to bring in Teddy. They need to bring Jessica Jones because she is their unofficial and totally official den mother. So that would actually be cool. I would like to see Jessica Jones. Like, if the rumors about Charlie Cox coming back to the MCU or coming into the MCU to be
part of She-Hulk.
Again, for She-Hulk or for Spider-Man, because I've heard both rumors. Yeah. It would be nice to see Jessica Jones because she is the Young Avengers den mother and we need her.
Well, it's starting to sound like, and a lot of people are saying that anything before WandaVision TV show wise for Marvel is not considered MCU canon.
That doesn't mean they can't reuse the actors in a different.
Oh yeah. No. And I agree.
Why? Like, I mean, it doesn't have to be like a Kristen Ritter, specifically Jessica Jones.
Oh, I know, I think people were more like James Gunn, director of obviously Guardians of the Galaxy and in the upcoming Suicide Squad movie. He was pretty much saying like, I don't consider Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. as part of the MCU.
To be honest, we really shouldn't, because it doesn't, it makes sense up to a point, and then it doesn't.
I think once they got to a specific season and they kind of teetered away, because there were certain things that did tie into the MCU in the early season.
The first two or three seasons tied in, and then after they went to space, I think it was just dumb.
Yeah.
So Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. ain't canon, people. It ain't gonna be. Granted, James Gunn is not the authority on what is and isn't canon in Marvel, because he's not a producer.
Yeah.
But to be honest, I don't really put much stock in what Victoria Alonso says either.
But also at the same time, like, the reason I bring it up is because outside of Clark Gregg, who went over into Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., outside of, you know, obviously, like, certain actors redid their characters in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Haley Atwell did Agent Carter. The real point of the conversation really wasn't on them. It's on the Netflix stars. Because the actor of Charlie Cox, the actress of Jessica Jones, the actor who played Frank Castle, the Punisher, there's been a lot.
Jewish, by the way.
And is from Bethesda, Maryland, and still frequents the area, might I add. He actually still technically lives out here, which is really cool. But John Barenthal, you know, there's been talk of bringing these actors over into the actual MCU itself. And incorporating that, we've heard, like you were talking about, like with Charlie Cox and Spider-Man and maybe even She-Hulk, you know, which actually makes sense because Daredevil and She-Hulk were, I think they were like actually legitimate, like lawyer partners or something like that, or something like that. Or they did cases against each other. I don't know the full mythos on the
comic, team. But they have teamed up. I think honestly, he spent more time with Jessica and Luke than he has with She-Hulk, but I could be wrong. Yeah. But yeah, sometimes they've been opposite sides. Sometimes they've been on the same side. That's just how comics works. Because after, you know, 60 years of continuity with characters like Daredevil and She-Hulk, you're bound to.
Yeah. It'll be interesting because I know a lot of people really enjoy the work of a lot of the Netflix Marvel actors. Like, a lot of them were, because, like, I mean, I personally don't have Netflix, so I never saw the shows. I'm not apologizing for that because I don't like Netflix. But I've heard
that you're allowed to shame him for not having Netflix.
Here's my response. There's the middle finger. But anyways, but I've heard great things about how well all the actors did in the roles and how they really brought those characters to life the way, you know, especially for a character like the Punisher, you know, which has had a very often on sketchy film history.
So as amazing as that all is, and I did really love Netflix's Daredevil, to zero in on kind of the main topic is, we'll see what happens if Charlie Cox does appear in She-Hulk or in Spider-Man Far From Home, No Way Home, or if he appears in both or neither, we will find out soon. So Michael, I think I'm gonna call it and ask you about your social medias.
You could find me living out my glorious purpose on Twitter at the Lindenbaum 75, Facebook at facebook.com/x75productions. I'm probably going to create my own Nexus event and journey into the mystery on Twitch at twitch.tv/themichaelx75. And of course, for all time and always, everything's on the website at txhdhockey.com, and for the show specific /nerdy-notions. And I'm just going to go hide in the corner over here because Sasha's giving me that look of like, did you really just use Loki title episodes?
You know, episode you titles. Find my lovely self while not murdering Michael. That's a joke.
She's really going to kill me.
Yeah. Across the screen while we're in like 10 states away. So you can find me over at geekgirl101.tumblr.com. I am very friendly. I'm happy to chat with you. Most recent topic of conversation is, of course, the Young Avengers, which is always a topic of conversation. And, of course, the upcoming comic Trial of Magneto. Hashtag Magneto is innocent. And hashtag Magneto did nothing wrong. But you can also find me on Geeky Kaplan on Twitter, where I am complaining about both of those things, but also issues of anti-Semitism and really bad Jewish jokes in TV shows like iCarly. And of course, geekycaptainwrites.wordpress.com, where I actually have an article planned that will hopefully be published at some point on the Leverage Redemption revival of the Leverage show. So make sure to keep an eye out for that. And as always, we will catch you next time whenever we decide to actually watch and react to, or however format we decide, of the New Mutants movie.